we present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a classified advert read by Peter Donaldson.
For sale, coffee percolator, white, good condition, ideal for making coffee.
And our thanks to Roger Niven from Inverness for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Shafi Kwasandi. And opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Andy Hamilton. Right, Francis, whose no questions asked lending scheme has led to questions being asked for a second time?
Is it the Prime Minister of this great nation of ours?
It is, yes.
Who's been down the nick again, helping police with their inquiries. Blair actually hasn't been arrested yet. Everyone else that he knows or has ever met has been arrested. Lord Levy was arrested yet again this week. This time for suspicion of conspiracy to pervert the course of justice. And as someone pointed out, conspiracy involves more than one person, so whom is he alleged to have been conspiring with? We don't know yet, but certain people spring to mind. But it's all crashing down around him. It's so exciting. There will be this final scene where Yates of the Yard gathers them all into the drawing room.
Do you reckon Blair will get an ASBO?
We would have him tagged. Wouldn't that be fantastic?
It's amazing how you get used to a story, though, doesn't it? This inquiry has been trundling along, you know, and you get used to those recurring rhythms on a story. I was watching the TV and Hugh Edwards came on and said, Lord Levy has been arrested. And my first thought, well, is it Tuesday already?
He's making such a fuss, Levy. He said, I was arrested yet again. This is outrageous. Under new legislation, he could be held for 28 days without charging. He was only held for about an hour or two.
I'm comforted by the fact that there are no rooms in any prisons. I mean, it's like we're going, you know what?
Aren't they buying a few more prison ships, a few more hulks?
Well, then they'll need them for Blair's friends, won't they? Blair was being interviewed, and it shows how divorced he is from reality now, because when he was challenged about his plans, he said, I want to finish what I've started. And he doesn't realise that's what we're worried about.
When he does his interviews, though, the one with John Sopel the other day, there's a lot of hysterical giggling that comes in and waving his hands around, and I was expecting him to jump on the sofa and bounce up and down and say he loved Katie Holmes.
I think he's giggling. Imagine how much Gordon Brown's laughing. Yes, indeed, it's Britain's answer to Richard Nixon, Tricky Tony, who has been questioned for the second time by police investigating the cash for honours allegations, and they had to question him twice, once for each face. So that's 2 points to Francis. Shappy, welcome to the show. Who took a gamble on the Mancunian candidate?
This is about the super casinos, isn't it?
Yep.
And it's gone to Manchester rather than London or Blackpool. And I think the people of Blackpool are very upset because they've been the hotbed of slot machines. So it's gone to Manchester.
Hmm.
Part of Manchester that's apparently a bit run down, so they thought they needed a bit of shiny things and they're going to make it all pretty.
All these poor people who live in this derelict district are going to get rich by playing on the slot machines.
Yeah, that, I can see how that'll really work.
I think it's a London strike against Manchester. You locate in the rundown area of Manchester, and the only people who can afford to gamble are those from the non-rundown area, who will then go to the rundown area, so the whole of Manchester will become rundown because they will lose all their money there to a man called Sol Kirshner.
It could have a big impact, though. I mean, all those one-armed bandits, I mean, for a lot of Mancunians, it'd be the first time they see fruit.
It is a bit of a mixed message, isn't it? Because the government boasts that it is tough on crime, tough on the causes of crime. I mean, a casino is a form of organised crime, really, isn't it? It's just a form of very slow theft.
Despite both Blackpool and the Millennium Dome thinking they had the winning hand, Manchester was chosen to become the site of the UK's first super casino. The Millennium Dome Consortium will apply for a judicial review of the Casino Advisory Panel's decision, while the Blackpool Consortium will send the panel a strongly worded message inside a stick of rock. So 2 points to Shappy. Andy, why are parents nursing empty purses?
Is this about the cost of nursery care?
Yeah.
Apparently, it is now cheaper just to send your child to Eton at the age of two To be honest, I didn't quite understand why nursery provision has got so expensive, whether it's security for the people who work there, or I don't know. But anyway, there's a lot of dissent and uproar about the cost. So presumably we'll start seeing some no-frills nurseries coming through fairly soon.
It's £152 a week, apparently, the average childcare bill. Wow. Which is what it costs us to look after Alan and Wine downstairs. Yeah. Cheap, frankly.
But he still gets out that little gate, doesn't he?
Yeah, I know. A report by the Daycare Trust has revealed that full-time nursery care can cost up to £19,000 a year, as much as the fees for some of Britain's top boarding schools. Actually, I've got a supplementary question. What other cost has been piling up this week?
Is it debt?
It is debt, yes.
£1.3 trillion it's up to this week, and it's rising.
That's between all of us, though. I don't keep up to date with my statement.
But that's still quite a lot.
That is quite a lot.
That means we are all screwed. We keep taking out bigger and bigger loans so that we can have more and more money to pitch in our last gasp attempt to get a peerage, and it fails again.
That's
and
where all my money goes.
Paying it off for the next 50 years.
How much is a trillion?
How much is a peerage?
A million million.
A million million?
Yeah.
And it was what? How many trillion? 3 trillion.
No, 1.3.
That's...
Oh, I'm trying to work out the level of your concern. I mean, when will you get worried? When it's 6 trillion? 1.2.
After the first couple of trillion, it really doesn't impact.
Extra point to Francis. Personal debt has reached record levels this week at nearly 140% of income, making us one of the most indebted nations in the world. Alan, have a listen to this.
When you walk in a dream, but you know you're not dreaming, signore. Excuse me, but you see back in old Napoli, that's amore.
Alan, which male floozy was forced to say scoozy?
It's a wonderful story. I mean, I love Berlusconi being there just to show that ours aren't quite as bad as it's possible to be. Anyway, this ghastly, predatory little promiscuite at 70. I don't know what the Italian is for, I suppose a shag will be out of the question, but he went up to three women at some Italian bun fight. Mm. And said he would like to run away with any of them, or in his case, hobble away with any of them. And his wife got a bit ratty, and she wrote to La Repubblica and got a front page story, I think demanding an apology from him. And whether he has or not, I don't know.
Yes,
he apologized later that afternoon. He spent all day composing this awful, syrupy apology to his wife, which was then issued, saying, yes, of course, I apologize. I love you. You are my sweet little tiramisu. You are the sensuous little spaghetti strand stuck in my teeth and all that rubbish that sort of Italian feudal fakers going for.
He said, I am proud and playful.
Yes.
This is the explanation for not having apologized earlier. And he also said, I am auto-ironic. It's good. It's like a sarcastic washing machine, isn't it?
I wonder whether he grew hair on his hands.
2 points to Alan. Former Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi was forced to apologise to his wife after she wrote an open letter to a newspaper complaining about his incessant public flirting. Berlusconi has been accused of embezzlement, tax fraud, false accounting and attempting to bribe a judge. That's nothing, really. Our man in charge is going for a war crimes indictment, I think. Actually, nothing at all. At the end of round one, the scores are Alan and Andy have got 4, but Francis and Shappy are in the lead with 5. And we start round 2 with an automatically generated email from Marks and Spencer's Customer Services.
If your email is regarding our technology products, please telephone our technology customer service, as we're currently unable to respond to emails.
Francis, whose favourite Dr. Dr. joke has the government as its punchline?
Well, these are the GPs who've taken the government to the cleaners. They made the mistake of boasting about it. One of the negotiators this week went on the radio and said, couldn't believe my life, we sat there negotiating away with Patricia Hewitt. Not an enticing prospect, at the best time. But instead of Patricia Hewitt doing her usual Hewitt act, she said, all right, have some money. Do you want more? Have more. And they all walked out hooting with laughter. I have a slight theory about this, though, because watching Blair giving his interview on the telly the other day, It did occur to me, he could technically be sectioned under the Mental Health Act. I think you only need about two doctors to say that he's a menace to himself and others, which you'd think would be easy enough. But, of course, they won't, because he's bought them off. He's given them all 30% pay rises.
But how terrifying if you return to the community, Francis.
I'll be wandering up and down the high street with plastic bags shouting at people. I used to be Prime Minister.
Do you think what happened in the negotiations is that they were sitting at a table and the government wrote a number down and passed it over, and the doctors wrote a number down and passed it over, and the government had no idea what the doctors had written down? It was Dr. Simon Fradd, apparently, who was part of the negotiating team for the new GP contract, and he told Radio 4's The Investigation that his colleagues were so stunned at the generous conditions offered by the government that they thought it was a bit of a laugh. So 2 points for Francis. Chappie, why are the British suckers for a quick fix?
Why are the British suckers for a quick fix? Oh, it's not that kind of question. Okay, I thought you were going to tell me a joke. If I don't know the answer, am I shot?
No, darling. The sucking would be the clue to it.
Oh, I know. Oh, right. No. Well, I think what you're alluding to, Sandy, is rather than diet and exercise, many women are opting for liposuction, and it's becoming a bit of a problem. Because Jade Goody, I believe, she released an exercise video, and then it transpired that she'd had liposuction. Jade lied, as well as being scary. And
so Jade's had liposuction and still looks like that.
She's got lovely eyes.
I think you have to...
The problem with liposuction is, if they liposuck, I don't even know if that's the correct expression, if they liposuck your stomach, then the rest of you will just look flabby. Then they have to liposuck all of you, and that'll take hours and hours, and the pain and the stress, frankly, you might as well stop eating donuts. I don't understand. And people die liposucking.
That's when they do it themselves with a Hoover. I've tried that.
I would have a terror of liposuction, that it will be like emptying a balloon, and to a farting noise you'd be banging around these Harley Street waiting rooms from wall to wall before you sort of expired on the floor.
Your lunch, listeners.
Well, according to the British Association of Plastic Surgeons, or BAPS... didn't even get on to the breast-related plastic surgery. According to BAPS, the number of Britons having liposuction has nearly doubled since last year. 2 points to Chappie. Andy, have a listen to this.
Hey, you've been a messin' where you shouldn't have been a messin', and now someone else is getting all your best. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you.
Andy, why is it becoming more difficult for criminals to hot-foot it from the scene?
This is because our police force, they're getting all this super wizzo technology now, and they've got, as well as fingerprints, they've got footprints on a database of criminals. Now, I'm confused, because, first of all, I didn't realise we had so many barefoot criminals. I think that shows an element of naivety on the part of the criminals. But as I understand it, they take a print of the sole of people's shoes. Mm. Now, I wouldn't have thought they were as unique as fingerprints. It seems to me that the potential for wrongful conviction, if you just happen to have Doc Martens with the same kind of wear pattern as one of the friends of Tony Blair, is massive.
Yeah, and what happens is, the way the police computer works, set up 18 years ago and still doesn't work properly, if they find a footprint, they're going to arrest the Archbishop of Canterbury for 14 roof-stripping jobs and the Maples turnover, and the idea that you can computerise shoes, as Andy says, to a non-unique design... Mm. You'd have to arrest 30,000 people a week in order to make the thing work.
Also, you don't need to be a master criminal to work out that it might be wise to wear someone else's shoes when you... Or you get those shoes they used to have with the animal footprints in them, which I don't think they do anymore.
But I had those with a compass in the heel. That was fantastic.
Then the police spend all their time looking for a squirrel.
The world's first national database of shoe imprints from crime scenes is being launched next month by the UK's Forensic Science Service. And the database means criminals may have to buy a new pair of shoes for every job. Must be the first time it makes burglary an attractive career choice for women. So that was 2 points to Andy. Alan, who's insured a new way to drive motorists mad?
I think this is people having Denver boots put on their cars if they don't cough up the insurance.
Yeah.
Insurance is very, very low, but even so, people don't take it out and drive around the country, and then are going to be, cars are going to be clamped.
Yeah.
How are they going to find out that people's cars aren't insured? I don't know. But they'll just clamp everything anyway, as a matter of course.
They're going to take them away.
How are they not insured?
It's because everybody knows everything about you now.
They'll
be watching.
They only know my footprint. They don't know how I drive.
I don't understand.
If I had a car with shoes, I'd be in dead trouble. I don't actually, though, think people pay insurance anymore, because now that I spend a great deal of the afternoon watching afternoon television, deeply depressed because I can't believe, really, that Des O'Connor is doing Countdown. The great Des Lynam has passed out. Anyway, every time there's an interval, it's either the bloke walking into the bath sideways and the water doesn't fall out, which always puzzles, as News Quiz listeners know, but it's always about car insurance. Everyone that comes on is guaranteed to be cheaper than the last one. If you sit there for a full afternoon, by about 6 o'clock, if you ring up, they should be paying you to insure your car.
Yes, apparently it's a nightmare. Motorists who fail to renew their insurance could receive automatic fines of £100 and have their cars snatched, even from their own driveway. It's outrageous. There'd be a law next telling me I can only drive on the left. At the end of round two, Alan and Andy have got 8 points, but Francis and Shappy are still in the lead with 9. Before we start round three, here is an offer from the Radio 1 website.
Sexually transmitted infections are spreading fast in the United Kingdom. Sex without a condom is seriously risky. We have 120,000 condoms to give away on a first-come, first-served basis.
Thanks to Simon Rose in Kendal for spotting that. Francis, whose village wasn't built to last?
Archaeologists have found a settlement near Stonehenge, and it turns out that all the builders who put up Stonehenge had this kind of temporary village, mostly Polish builders, I think. I assume. And it's now been dug up again.
The thing is, Stonehenge clearly isn't finished. Do they still get notes saying, no, we'll be back Thursday afternoon?
You don't get that with Polish builders. You know, an ex-boyfriend of mine is a builder, and he was complaining, going, brimming poles, and there's no work now. They've all come over because they work so hard. They work so hard that they're giving less work to us Brits. I was like, bloody foreigners coming over here with their work ethic.
I mean, it's amazing that something, you know, you drive past it, it's very impressive, but they don't know who built it, and they don't know how they built it, and they don't know why they built it. What are these historians doing all the time? They're just slacking.
Yes, 2 points to Francis. Archaeologists have unearthed a Neolithic village which they believe housed hundreds of workers who built Stonehenge. And they knew it was a settlement of builders' houses because the find includes hundreds of tools, early copies of the Daily Mail, and stone carvings of topless female druids. Shappy, have a listen to this. The 1980s beat combo Duran Duran. Now, who's hoping for a howling success north of the border?
Well, I know this because I like wolves, because they're like dogs, only more vicious. They're wicked. This is about
not coming to your house at all.
This is about reintroducing wolves into the wild in Scotland, because I don't know why they died off. I think it will work, but I think it will be very dangerous, because to me it's like saying what we're going to do is that we're going to go to the Forest of Dean and introduce lions. Am I worrying needlessly about wolves?
They're introducing them to kill red deer.
They want to bump off deer, but unfortunately, of course, the wolves don't discriminate. They'll also kill sheep, anything else that comes near them. So,
what if someone's camping?
No, wolves don't kill people.
Do they not?
No.
I bet there was a wolf once that killed a person.
No. I've just read a novel called The Tenderness of Wolves, and it says that wolves don't kill people. I believe it. It is a novel on the event.
Something of a giveaway in the title.
werewolves, on the other hand. I did also see an American werewolf in London many years ago. They can be nasty.
You know what we should... What we should really worry about is elephants, because elephants kill more people every year than any other animal. So I would be dead against introducing elephants to Scotland.
I thought red deer were culled by the gentry. I think we just need to breed more gentry, don't we? Encourage William and Harry and the rest of them to get stuck across. Because there's plenty of land out there.
Apparently wolves breed faster than the royals. That's the reason.
And more intelligently.
Truth of the matter is the Scots just haven't got the hang of it. They have one problem, say, with rats, and they think, I know, let's bring back wolves to get them, and then they have to bring in hedgehogs to kill the wolves.
There's plenty of
them. It's turning into a nursery rhyme, isn't it? But I think it's a great idea. I think it'll boost tourism as well. We go to the Highlands a lot, and it is very exciting going across the moors and seeing a magnificent stag. But I'd be even more excited if I saw a stag legging it away from a pack of wolves.
Aren't you scared, though, that they'll eat you? Like, if you see a stag, it's not going to bite your head off.
You can't be sure of that. What you would need to do is go to a stag's home and see whether there were human heads.
I've got a quick animal bonus question. Whose love of horseplay makes them the strumpets of the sea?
Oh, seahorses.
Oh, very good. Veritable chorus.
37% of sexual acts by seahorses are homosexual. Doesn't mean that 37% of them are gay, because a lot of them are bisexual, apparently.
I believe the male seahorse becomes pregnant. So how do they know it's not just a woman? And also, when you were a kid, did you think the seahorses were as big as real horses? And then when you went to the aquarium, you were really shocked that they're so tiny.
I grew up in an aquarium. And I was amazed when I got outside to see the milk cart being drawn by one of these things.
I think the woman has the babies, but then she gives them to the man, and the man keeps them in his tummy.
This thing to you is like someone who's been watching National Geographic and not really understood it. It's lovely.
That's the only way to watch National Geographic.
I'm not going to give any points because everybody knew it was the seahorses. Scientists at 15 sea life centres have found that seahorses are not monogamous as once thought, but extremely promiscuous with both sexes. Original question about wolves. A study by the Royal Society has recommended that wolves be reintroduced to the Scottish Highlands for the first time in over 200 years in order to control the rapidly growing deer population. And, of course, there would be some knock-on effects. Sheep farmers are worried that the wolves would kill their livestock or, at the very least, steal their clothing and dress up in it. So we move on. Andy, who's getting too big for their clogs?
Alan Curran has just written a very succinct summary of the story on a little notepad for me, which says Dutchmen are taller than anyone.
Yes.
Yes, Dutchmen, they're fantastically tall.
Are Danes tall?
Well, now that I've left, they...
The Americans are very upset at this because they've been overtaken. But the truth is the Americans are actually getting smaller as the result of immigration from Central and South America. And they're very upset by this.
But surely the taller Americans have grown sideways. Isn't that the problem?
Yes, the Dutch have displaced the Americans as the tallest people on Earth, followed by the Norwegians, the Germans, and the Danes. The Dutch are now 5 centimetres taller than the average European, and thanks to EU standardisation, will have to be destroyed. Alan, who's being paid to dormir sur le travail?
Sleep at work. I don't know. I thought you were going to do the Marlene Dietrich one.
It's to do with... people are more effective, they found in France, if they have a nap after lunch.
Yes. Oh, they're taking siestas.
So they're institutionalising it into their working day.
Mm-hmm.
As someone who has, quite often has a little ziz after lunch, I know it certainly made me much more effective.
Is it true, Alan, that the French call the siesta le nap? Is that true?
I have absolutely no idea, but I remember seeing that sort of franglais talk in the Boulevard Haussmann in Paris. There was a years ago, there was a very exclusive men's shop, and it had a Prince of Wales check suit advertised in the window, and it said, Très snob, presque cad.
Which is quite a lot of famous people who didn't touch, who used to take a nap, and Bill Clinton was a great believer in sleeping, I think, during the day, and often advised his interns to get their head down for a few minutes. The French government is piloting a new scheme to reintroduce the siesta for tired French workers. Hopefully not French pilots. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings that the teams have brought along. Francis.
This is from the Times, last week. Talking on a mobile phone while driving affects your concentration and ability to read, says Douglas Alexander, the Transport Secretary. It is impossible, he says, to do two things at once and do them well. Douglas Alexander is also the Scottish Secretary.
Chappie.
Well, this is from the Sunday Telegraph, sent in by Pauline Halling. A guy had some blood tests and he was told to ring for the results the following week at his GP's surgery between 11 a.m. and noon. And he was just passing the surgery at that time, so he popped in and said, can I have my results? The receptionist said, no, you must ring in. And the guy goes, yeah, I realise that, but it's between the time that you said and I was passing. No, you must ring. So the guy gets his mobile phone out and rings the receptionist. And the receptionist answered, asked his name and the nature of his query. Then she gave him his results and replaced the receiver. He left in amazement at the wonders of technology and customer service.
Andy.
This is from Ian Wolfe in Nice, France, and it's a translation of a story in the paper Nice Matin. A man was seen in a Nice supermarket frantically throwing all sorts of stuff into two trolleys. A security man was waiting for this man as he headed for the delivery exit of the store and asked him how he reckoned on paying. My wife would pay for the shopping, he says. After a while, the security man asked him where she was. I've no idea. We separated 10 years ago. It closes with, a psychiatrist will be seeing him at the police station.
Alan.
Mine's from the East Allerton Press, Sandy, and it says, Tom Sutcliffe, landlord of the Dangling Man public house at Beckett's Corner, is annoyed that the brewery intends to replace his pub sign with one which, because of modern sensitivity about capital punishment, does not show a gibbet. It's ridiculous, Mr. Sutcliffe told us. Without the gallows, people will wonder what the dangling refers to.
Thank you. Let's take a look at the final score. Alan and Andy have got 13 points, but this week's winners are Francis and Chappie with 14. Before we leave you, here's a National Trust event spotted by Irene Orbach.
Jewellery Workshop. Learn the basics of jewellery making from found materials. £10 per person. Suitable for 12 years and older. Not suitable for dogs.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Green, Chappie Corsandy, Andy Hamilton and Alan Corrin. In the chair was Sandy Toxig, and the news was read by me, Peter Donaldson. The chair script was written by Lucy Clark, Roderick Crooks and Simon Littlefield, with additional material by Daniel Ward. The producer was Ed Morris.